This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Tree Lin. Too many young people face barriers to reproductive health information and care. Dr. Lavitha Sivapatham specializes in reproductive health of young girls so that they can make informed decisions about their sexual and reproductive health and rights in their adolescence and adulthood. And Dr. Lavitha is in the studio to talk about just this today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Why does gynecology require a special interest in children and adolescents? Because I'm not going to lie, until fairly recently, I didn't know that this was a subspecialty.
Right. This is, you know, the question that most people ask me when I tell them what I do. Over the years, I think we have realized that children and adolescents have got gynecological issues that are very different from adult women. You know, a 15-year-old's issues is very different from what a 45-year-old woman would have. And the way we talk to young people, children and adolescents, is very different. You know, the skill set that's required to speak to this group of people is very different. And that's why we now need a specialty or a subspecialty which deals with gynecological problem in children and adolescents. And the fact that I'm here and I've been trained tells you that the government also realizes the need for this, and therefore, you know, they've started sending people off for training on how to manage gynecological problems in this age group.
So it's a relatively recent surge of interest then, you'd say?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think the interest and the need for, well, we call it PAG or pediatric adolescent gynecology. It's been there for a long time. It's just that because a lot of the problems that, or the issues that are dealt with are mostly structural anomalies of the uterus and the vagina, traditionally it has always been the senior most gynecologist in a hospital who deals with these children. So it's always been there. In Malaysia, for example, I believe the first pediatric and adolescent gynecology clinic started about 9 to 10 years ago. The rest of the Asia Pacific, for example, the Philippines, Hong Kong, Australia, maybe for the past 10 to 15 years. But in places like Europe and stuff, you know, it's been there for 30 to 40 years. It's a long time ongoing subspecialty, and the need has always been there.
How is the practice of pediatric and adolescent gynecology different now compared to its early years? If the need has always been there, mm-hmm. have the needs changed or are they pretty much similar?
Yes, the needs have changed. Adolescents nowadays are very different from what, you know, our parents were or what even I was many years ago. The previous focus was always on fixing structural anomalies, vagina problems, uterus anomalies kind of thing. Now we talk about quality of life issues. We talk about managing periods. We talk about heavy periods. We talk about painful periods. And the focus now is more on that. And although in the past, you know, your mother or your grandmother would have said, you know, period pain is normal, we all go through it, you know, just deal with it. We don't want young women to miss out on school, miss out on their education, and do things that they want to do simply because they're having a period or they're having cramps. And we know that these are fixable things, and having a pediatric and having someone with a special interest in pediatric and adolescent gynae means there can now be a focus on these problems, and it's not going to be just, you know, swept away or not talked about. We can talk about it. We can fix it. It's easy to fix. We can, you know, give simple medications, fix period pains, and girls can go to school. It's, you know, something that we need to do.
We're discussing the reproductive health of younger girls today, something that we haven't addressed on the show before because we have Dr. Lavita in, a pediatric and adolescent gynecologist. So if you'd like to ask any questions about yourself or about your daughters or about nieces, anybody really, if you have questions about their periods, about the kinds of needs that they might have, give us a call. That number is 03-77-109-000. You can also reach us by texting 01-62-019-000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. So while we talk about those needs then, what kind of care is it that pediatric and adolescent patients typically need and seek out?
Surprisingly, there is a wide variety of things that these patients come to us for. The commoner problems are skin conditions, vulval skin conditions, like there's something we call vulvovaginitis, which is quite common. In a Western population, there is also a condition called lichen sclerosis, which they come and see us for. That's usually in girls who are premenarchal. That means they haven't started having periods yet or haven't gone into puberty yet. There are those patients who come to us, you know, in the emergency department with some injuries in that area because they've been, you know, swinging on the monkey bars or something like that. And those are some conditions. A large proportion of patients who I see actually have got period-related problems. So it's either too little, too much, you know.
Too painful.
Too painful, too frequent. That kind of thing. So various types of period problems. Some children or adolescents have got delayed puberty due to various reasons, or they go into puberty but they don't get their periods to a certain age, and then we see them and try and figure out what's going on. I think the other thing that we sometimes don't realize is that a lot of people get symptoms that are cyclical according to their periods. So, you know, you can have cyclical nausea and vomiting, and sometimes it's really bad that they need to come into hospital. And this is also something that we can fix. I've seen young girls with cyclical asthma attacks. Just before their periods, they get bad asthma attacks, and that's something that we can fix as well. We also know that children with epilepsy can have an increased number of seizures just prior to periods or during periods. And that's, you know, it's all very interesting. And if you don't deal with young people, you may not realize that this happens. I even met a girl who's diabetic, who's on insulin, whose sugar control goes just haywire just before her period.
Because of PMS?
Yeah, so because of all the changes in the hormones and that happen all through the cycle, it affects their sugar control as well. And when we fix periods or you know, do something about periods, that gets fixed as well. And as I said, traditionally, the main thing that adolescents used to come to us for was structural anomalies. There can be certain types of, you know, true uteruses, or some people have got different types of blockages in their vagina, and those are things that we deal with as well. More recently, we've seen a lot of childhood cancer survivors. They either during their cancer treatment, where they can have heavy periods, and these periods can interfere with their treatment because their, you know, their blood counts will drop if they have heavy periods and stuff, and then they can't start on their treatment, their chemotherapy, and that's something that we see as well. And sometimes children who get cancer when they're really young, you know, when they're 3 or 4 years old or around that age, they can have delayed puberty and have delayed onset of periods as well. And these are some of the patients that, you know, we see.
And I want to focus more on menstruation, because that's something that I'm sure, as you say, forms the majority. And we'll get to that after this. As always, our phone lines are open. So if you've got any questions about the reproductive health of younger girls, we have a pediatric and adolescent gynecologist in the studio today, Dr. Lavita Sivapatham. If you'd like to give us a call, that number is 03-77-109-000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Dr. Lavita Sivapatham, pediatric and adolescent gynecologist, is in the show with me. And we're talking about the reproductive health of younger girls. Because, of course, we think about reproductive health oftentimes only as something that adult women need to consider. But for many people, it starts at 11, 12, sometimes younger. And on that note, we have a caller. Good afternoon, Rita.
Yeah, hello, good afternoon. I would like to ask a question. My daughter is only 9, but apparently she already had a period. So I just want to know, will it affect later when she, you know, when you marry late and then you have kids later on in life, will it like affect her, or will her period stop early?
Hi, Rita. Well, not very young to get periods. There are some girls who get their periods at 9. And we do know that some girls who get their periods earlier may stop having periods earlier as well. But it's not always that way. It's not necessarily going to be that way. And, you know, I wouldn't worry about her future ability to have children and stuff like that. It shouldn't be a problem. We do know that girls these days are starting to have their periods earlier, and it's fine. It's, you know, this, I wouldn't worry about anything.
But okay, do you have anything that, you know, like, do you think that there's anything that will, you know, stop her from having a period now and maybe a few years later and then continue? Is there any medication, anything?
Well, if her periods are bothering her, if you know, they are painful, or it's coming too often, or it's going on for, you know, a few weeks at a time, then there are medications to help her. But we also know that in young girls, in the first 3 years or so, even some up to 4 years, periods are often very irregular. So, you know, I would just suggest watching and waiting. But if her periods get painful or heavy or become a bit too long, then you should probably see a doctor.
Well, then, is there a medication like to stop her from having, and then later, maybe after a few years later, she has it back?
Different medications that she can take, but I think you should see a doctor so that they can decide on which is the right one. Yep.
But then, is there side effects?
Yep, every medication has got side effects. But again, each one has got a different side effect, so...
It depends.
Yeah, it depends on what she needs.
Thanks for the call, Rita.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. So I think the question there was whether or not Rita can put her daughter's period on hiatus. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you would recommend? Sort of like, it's too early, I want the period to only start coming at 13, mm-hmm. you know, so you take a 4-year break from your period. Mm-hmm. Does that exist?
It does, actually. It's something that's actually quite new to me as well. And this is something that I learned when I was training, you know, in Melbourne for the past year. So we do skip, this is just called, you know, skipping your periods. And we do this for a lot of our patients, especially patients who've got very severe painful periods, or patients who've got very severe premenstrual symptoms. We put them on the oral contraceptive pill, and they take it continuously without stopping. And if you take a tablet a day without stopping, technically you can not have periods for, you know, at least 3 to 4 months at a time. And then you might get a bit of a bleed in between, and then you can go on. So it is possible to do that, but I'm not sure whether this is something that's acceptable to our community, because, you know, most people say, isn't it unhealthy not to have a period every month? But it's not, because there's no research to show that not having a period is a bad thing. I mean, I'll use my grandmother as an example. She had 9 children, so she had 9 years of no periods. In between, she would have breastfed all her children. That's probably another 9 years. So she would have had, you know, a long period of time without periods. And if you know the reason you're not having periods, so in this case, if we start you on the pill or put you on an injection and you know the reason that you're not having your period, then it's absolutely fine. But it's a concept that's a little bit difficult for most people to accept.
Because it feels natural to have a period.
Exactly.
Right.
But it's not, I think, it's not natural to have a painful period, not be able to go to work, not be able to go to school. And I think, you know, that's not a good thing either.
We're talking today about the reproductive health of younger girls, things like periods, things like birth control. If you have any questions about a young girl that you might know, your daughter or, you know, anybody in your life or your family that you care about that you'd like to ask a question for, Dr. Lavita is here. Give us a call. That number is 03-77-109-000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. So menstruation, you know, as you pointed out, if you know that there's, if you know why you're not menstruating, it's okay. And similarly, I think in adulthood, often we know roughly why our periods are doing the things that they do. Perhaps we've gotten used to having severe cramps. You know, this is just a lifelong thing. Perhaps we've just gotten used to things. But for a teenager, we are often told, I mean, I remember when you first start having your period and you do the reading, you're always told, yeah, you know, it might be very painful for a while. It might be very irregular for a while. Mm-hmm. Why are the first few years of starting your period such a rough ride?
Okay. So to have regular periods, there needs to be this communication with certain parts of your brain and your ovaries. So we call this the HPO axis, the hypothalamus, pituitary and ovarian axis. So there is a very delicate interplay of hormones between these three parts. So the hypothalamus and the pituitary are in the brain and the ovaries are, you know, in the pelvis. And these hormones that they send to each other, the signals that they send to each other, has to be in a certain manner to have periods every month. And in the first 3, up to 4 years after periods start, this interplay is not yet mature. So it's an immature axis, and that's why periods are irregular. And it's perfectly normal to have irregular periods.
Mm. And it doesn't indicate that. So if you have if the first few years of your period having life, I guess, are not smooth, you know, if they're painful, if the axis is a little bit off, does it indicate anything about your future periods?
No, not at all. Not at all. So it's just normal. It is normal to have a teenager having, you know, weird, irregular periods that are all over the place. So, yeah.
We have a question now from Marcus. Good afternoon, Marcus.
Hi, I'm Francis.
Oh, hi, Francis.
Okay, I have a daughter. When she gets pain every month, she suffers a lot of cramps and she's forced to actually miss school on that day. So whom can or where can we go for consultation? I live in Subang Jaya.
So you can see a gynecologist. Any gynecologist will be able to handle this problem. It's just period pain, but on your own, you can start her on some simple pain medications that she can take whenever she has her periods as well. But, you know, I would suggest seeing a gynecologist and just having a checkup, and then after that, starting on whatever medications that she might need. So there are various things that we can do and we can help with this.
Any gynae can?
Yes, any gynae should be able to manage this, yeah.
Okay, okay. But at which clinic are you based in, doctor?
We will take that, Francis, we'll take that offline. I'm going to put you on hold and our producer, Tina, will get back to you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so with that said, with people like Francis and Rita both have, I mean, Francis didn't say how old his daughter was, I believe. But with Rita, I was thinking about this. If I were the mother of a 9-year-old, then I had to have that talk. What, as from a doctor's point of view, what do you want parents to be communicating to their daughters when they start having their periods? Because my mother really just kind of threw the necessary at me and left me alone.
Yeah. So I think it's very important that parents, it's difficult for parents to talk to their children about puberty and periods and stuff, but I think it's very important to start somewhere. Because when you start talking to your children about puberty, then you become the source of information, not the internet, not Google and friends and peers who may not have proper information. There are various websites available for parents, actually, to go through and see how they can start talking to their children. And I think talking to your daughters about their bodies and what, how they should, you know, take care of their bodies and which part is personal and people cannot touch and stuff like that should start from, you know, even 5-6 years of age. And if you start talking to your daughter from that age, things become a bit more comfortable rather than suddenly having to speak to them when, you know, when you need to buy them their first bra and stuff like that. So I think it's very important that parents become the source of information for their young children. Especially more for, I think, children who have disabilities, physical and mental disabilities. It's even more important. And
because they're vulnerable as well, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, they are vulnerable. And they don't understand what puberty is. They don't understand the changes in their bodies. You know, some of them may be, you know, afraid of blood. And when periods start, it becomes a disaster. So starting to talk to them before everything happens is probably the best way to go. You know, when you start noticing just a bit of breast buds, you know, puberty is starting. And that's when you have to start talking to them. There are lots of books in the market with pictures and, you know, easy to understand captions and stuff for children with disabilities or children without any disabilities, which can help the parents to teach their children about puberty and stuff.
One aspect, I wanted to touch on something that you said earlier, because you mentioned birth control, the birth control or oral contraception here used as not necessarily for contraceptive purposes, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's really more for regulating the period.
Periods, yes.
But even with adult women, it can come with a bad rep. You know, not everybody understands what the oral contraceptive does.
Yeah.
How do you talk to parents, you know, about putting their children on a very long-term medication? Because once you start, of course, you don't really want to stop and start again.
Yeah. So I think what's important is the explanation. The explanation that they get from a doctor as opposed to a friend or a neighbor or a, you know, a relative is totally different. And I find that my patients are quite receptive towards putting their children on the oral contraceptive pill because they bring their children to me because they've got, you know, heavy periods that are every 2 weeks and they just can't cope. They're so tired all the time. They can't go to school. They can't function. And when I tell them that the best option is probably putting them on the pill for a few months and then seeing how it goes, then they would rather have the child on the pill than, you know, missing school and stuff like that. So it's basically down to communication and allaying their fears about, you know, what the pill can do. So it depends on what the information that they have. So I usually ask them what they're worried about and then deal with it from there.
And are there worries about long-term side effects?
Oh, yes. So interestingly, parents or mothers are worried that their children will not be able to conceive in the future. But, you know, we all have that one friend who missed one pill and got pregnant. So we know that the pill is not going to cause fertility issues in the future. You know, bearing in mind that about 1 in 8 couples have problems conceiving anyway. And the pill is not going to increase that possibility or that risk in any way. So there's nothing to worry about. Mm.
We have a question now from Robert. Good afternoon, Robert.
Good afternoon. Hi, good afternoon, Dr. Lalita.
Yeah, hi, Robert.
Is vagina atresia under your specialty?
Yes, it is.
How do you treat it? Can the patient conceive after a treatment? Thank you.
Thanks, Robert.
So, vaginal atresia simply means that part of the vagina or the whole vagina didn't form properly while the child was, you know, in utero, in the mother's womb. So I can't really answer his question because there are vaginal atresia can be associated, either with the presence of a uterus or without. So if there is a uterus, then there is a possibility of pregnancy. But if there's no uterus, then there isn't.
And when we say, you know, the formation of the vagina, are we talking about both the... I mean, I think firstly, there's a very common misunderstanding about what the vagina actually is. Many mm-hmm. people think that it only refers to the external... Mm-hmm. The vulva, in fact, yep. Which is not what really it in what fact it is. Yeah. So when we say that some parts of the vagina don't develop, mm-hmm. Are we talking about the internal... How far back are we talking,
right.
I guess?
So embryology means when the child was in the mother's womb, the ovaries, the fallopian tubes and the uterus form from one section and the vagina forms from another part and they meet. So people can have failure of the formation of the vagina or they can have failure of the formation of the uterus and tubes. So there are various types of anomalies, which is why it's, you know...
It's hard to say.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
We're talking about the reproductive health of younger girls today. We're talking periods. We're talking, just the developments of the body, how hormones can affect things. If you would like to ask Dr. Lavita anything, give us a call. That number is 03-771-09000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. So Dr. Lavita, how much of your work involves counselling?
Well, here in Malaysia, not much. It's usually just dealing with patients who have problems. But I always take the opportunity to, you know, slip in a little bit of counselling and tell all my patients that none of my patients are going to have an unplanned pregnancy and then have a little chat about, you know, their bodies and contraception and stuff like that. But most of the patients that we see come in because they have a specific problem.
Do you find that when you have that little chat, mm-hmm. that they have a passing familiarity with their bodies and their health, or is it something that's news to them as such?
It depends on who. So it's really quite variable. Most of them understand a little bit about their bodies because if they're a bit older, they would have learned something in school, but, you know, not much. And interestingly, a lot of them know about pregnancy and how that happens, but many do not understand about sexually transmitted infections, which is very important for our young people to know about and how to prevent them.
And coming back to Rita's question, you said that it's quite common now that girls are experiencing puberty sooner mm-hmm. Than previous generations. For instance, among my peer group, I would say that if...
12?
Yeah. 12, you know, 12 is very common. You know, if it was delayed, maybe 14. If it was earlier, maybe 11, you know. But but 9, I admit that when Rita said 9, I was surprised, but you didn't seem to be. Do we know what's causing these earlier cycles?
So early puberty that we worry about or that we need to investigate and find out whether there is a different cause for this early menses is if it's before 8. So there could be, you know, tumours or stuff in the ovary or brain or other things that produce hormones that can cause the menses to come early. But after 8, it's part of the normal... the time that it can happen. The biggest reason is actually obesity. It's just increasing number of young people nowadays are obese, and that's the main reason for puberty occurring earlier.
Is the medical field keeping up with this?
I think obesity is a very big social problem, a complex public health issue. I think we are trying to do a lot, but I think there's a lot more work to be put in to tackle this issue.
As you mentioned, often people see you for a specific reason, right? There is a medical thing that's bothering them, that's causing them to visit the doctor. Mm-hmm. And free of that, let's say you are a regular 12-year-old who's having reasonably irregular periods. Would you recommend that that girl see a doctor or see a gynecologist, mm-hmm. or you think it's okay?
No. So in the United States, young people get checked up once a year, and examined and stuff. And a lot of people in this fraternity and the pediatric and adolescent gynecology fraternity feel that it is unnecessary because it can create a certain amount of trauma to them. So in this age group, up to the age of 18, I think unless you have a problem, you don't need to see a gynecologist. Perhaps I just want to add something else about, you asked me about counseling earlier, and something, there's a group of people that, you know, I would like to see more of, and that is the parents of children with disabilities, so that we can have the chat with them. And that's probably part, a bit of counseling, having a chat with them, talking to them about puberty and things that we can do with periods, just giving them the options, just to let them know the options that are available that we can help with, rather than them going away thinking that there's nothing that can be done and this is what it's going to be and they have to deal with this forever.
So all things being equal, and if you have a regular girl who's becoming, quite specifically here. So if you have a girl with, you know, regular periods, health seems fine. More or less fine, mm-hmm. Who grows into a woman mm-hmm. with the same. Mm-hmm. At what point should this person go to the gynecologist?
Well, the Malaysian recommendation for, you know, the only reason you would go to a gynecologist regularly is to have your pap smear done. And the Malaysian regulation is still when, you know, at the onset of sexual activity. But internationally, a lot of countries are coming up with newer guidelines that say that pap smear screening should only start at about 25. And this is because of the introduction of the HPV vaccine, which our girls get at school when they're 13. So the HPV vaccine will definitely reduce the incidence of cervical cancer. And the only reason we do pap smears is to screen for cervical cancer. So I think, you know, when you start having regular sexual activity, I think you should start seeing a gynecologist just to get yourself checked out.
A question from a listener. Will masturbation have any effects on reproductive health? Is there such a thing as too much?
Interesting question. I don't think so. I think it's actually quite healthy. And there shouldn't be any problems with, future health.
So when we come back to, someone coming to see you, mm-hmm. Are patients afforded patient confidentiality because they're younger, because they're not necessarily, adults mm-hmm. yet?
So patient confidentiality is actually a very complicated issue. But maybe what I can say is that when I see a patient on their own, if you're over 18, then everything's confidential, no questions asked. But if you're under 18, it depends what you tell me. If you tell me something that is going to be harmful to yourself, that you're going to do something to harm yourself, or if you tell me something means that you're going to harm somebody else, then it is not confidential. But most of everything else can be confidential. But it is still, again, a case-to-case basis.
In your view, what are the greatest sexual health challenges that young girls face?
I think peer pressure still, the same as it was years and years ago. But I think now with the advent of social media, it's just becoming much more difficult for, girls to manage. I think what's important actually is for us to, as society, as parents, to educate our girls about their bodies, about sexuality and self-identity, and give them the confidence to do things the right way. We need to empower our young women with this knowledge, because once they have this knowledge, they have the confidence to make the right decisions and not do silly things or, stuff that just because their peers are doing it, then they're just following. But if we don't equip them with this knowledge, then it's going to be really hard. And, research done in Scandinavian countries show that being open about sexuality and their bodies and stuff, it does not increase the risk or the rate of people having sex at a younger age. It actually reduces the rates of teenage pregnancies. It reduces the rates of teenage births, abortions, and that's a good thing.
So what advice would you offer young girls and women then on their sexual and reproductive health? You know, if society and if families and doctors need to work to empower these women and these girls, what would you like to tell them?
I would say, you know, start, if you need information about, knowledge about sexual reproductive health, I think the best people to talk to you about it are your teachers and your parents. Go to the right people to get this information. The internet is not always a safe place and may not always give you the right information. And your peers, your friends are the same age as you. They may not know better. And I think that's very important. And I think the message to parents is that please start talking to your children from a young age, you know, get rid of that barrier. And once you talk to them, you become the source of information. And I think that's very important because a parent is a safe person to get information from.
Thank you very much for coming in, Dr. Lavita. I've been speaking with Dr. Lavita Sivapatham, pediatric and adolescent gynecologist, and we've been discussing the reproductive health of younger girls. Today, you've been listening to Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.